the success of the 1994 Oscar award-winning film, The Adventures of Priscilla, Queen of the Desert, which told the story of three drag queens making the trek across Australia's outback, helped ignite a modern style of drag, filled with campy, self-deprecating fun and trans-inclusivity. The film was turned into a Tony Award-winning Broadway musical. And now, our local Pride Films and Plays is putting it on, featuring Honey West, who, as far as we know, is the first trans actor to play the role of the Grande Dame Bernadette.
Joining us today is the lovely Honey West, who's been a hit on the cabaret circuit since her debut in her 1990 one-woman show, A Taste of Honey. Listen as we chat with the legendary Honey West about her adventures in comedy, musical theater, and the early days of LGBT radio.
Her longtime friendship with transparent actor Alexandra Billings.
And what's Oprah's friendship like with the raunchy transgender actress Chili Pepper.
I'm Fausto Fernos.
I'm Mark Fillion.
And this is Feast of Fun.
Today's Feast of Fun podcast is made available free to the public without any commercial interruption. Please consider making a donation at feastoffun.com/donate or become a paid subscriber at feastoffun.com/plus to support this podcast you love.
Our guest today is the lovely Honey West, who has been a hit on the cabaret circuit since her debut in 1990 in her one-woman show, A Taste of Honey.
A Taste of Honey, yeah.
Honey is proud to become, as far as we know, the first trans actor to take on the role of Bernadette, originated by Terrence Stamp in the Chicago premiere of Priscilla, Queen of the Desert. Hong Kong! Welcome, Honey West.
Thank you. Thanks for having me. Yeah.
We're lifelong friends, you and I. And one of my first interviews on radio here in Chicago was with you and Alexandra Billings when you guys co-hosted a an evening radio show, Kiki Hour.
A Kiki Hour.
Lesbian Gay Radio,
was it? Lesbian Gay Radio?
Lesbian Gay Radio. And how did you get involved in AM talk radio?
Wow. Yeah. Well, it was Alan Amberg, and I think it eventually became Amberg Productions, or they asked me, and
you were like, yeah. I'm not doing anything.
Yeah. You know, it was interesting because we were Cadillac time. That's what they called drive time, you know, and, it went through different reincarnations, but we had a hoot. It was very structured.
Sure.
Because being, you know, drive time, you had your shadow weather report or your traffic report, weather identification. So we did get to talk and we had interviews, but they were like, you know, 3 minutes and 7 minutes and everything went so quick. Everything was very structured. It wasn't like this.
I remember we got into a conversation about Judy Davis playing Judy Garland.
Yeah.
And you and Alexandra Billings got into this long conversation like, I've been trying to be Judy Garland for all my life.
Alex embodies entertainers. She, you know, she started as a mimic. She was, you know, started as a lip syncer. But, you know, you'll see bits and pieces of her in her act where she'll, you know, you'll see a little bit of Judy. You'll see a little bit of Bette. You'll see a little bit of a lot of different people. And she's... She can, you know, I'm always amazed at mimics. She can take on the voice, the mannerisms. And
so for people who are not familiar, Alexandra Billings is one of the stars of Transparent on Amazon.
Yeah.
And the two of you sort of came into the scene in Chicago in the sometime in the past.
Sometime in the past.
Last century.
Last century.
In the last century. And both of you guys have sort of for a long time were the LGBT community's go-to gals when they needed a strong, reliable entertainer to host an event. You've just done so many things, which we'll get to in a minute. You were this name. You were before RuPaul's Drag Race came along and snatched all the gigs of all the girls. You and Alexandra Billings were booked for everything.
Yeah, we did a lot of stuff. You know, we're best friends, and we just enjoyed performing together. So that's what we ended up doing a lot because we had fun.
And when I first saw the musical, Priscilla, Queen of the Desert, the touring Broadway production, I thought about you and the stage production of The Diva Diaries.
Yeah.
And can you tell, describe to the listeners what The Diva Diaries was? Because it mirrors Priscilla, the stage production, a lot.
In a sense, it was a story about three entertainers that were performing at a bar that ideally they probably had been performing 20, 30 years, and the bar was getting ready to close. And this was kind of their last night. They get, the message and flowers saying, clean out your stuff. And so through the course of the musical, they start to remember their past. Well, their three younger selves come out, and you see a culmination of their older selves and their and how they are now and the things they've been through. So, there is a correlation of, because I in Priscilla, I have a younger self, a younger Bernadette, and I'm always the old one.
I always cast me as the old one, even when I was young.
Even when I was young, I was the old one.
and so in a lot of ways, Priscilla, the stage musical that you're involved with here in Chicago, and you're the first trans person to take on the role of Bernadette, who was originated by Terrence Stamp in the film.
As far as I know. I've done a lot of research, and the character Bernadette in the musical, because in the movie, there's a lot of heart. Mm-hmm. There's a lot, the journey, all three of these gals go through a journey. They find love, they find family, they find friendship, they find a lot of things. They also experience homophobia and violence and prejudice.
And a ping pong spitten nightclub wander.
They do experience
that
as well.
Who's a size queen.
Yeah. So,
you're no good husband. You have little pingling. They got rid of that line, though.
Yeah.
And so the stage production, like The Diva Diaries, it reminds me of Julie Taymor's and The Lion King, that they had both the actor and the puppet sort of representing the same character.
Sure.
And in this situation, you have somebody doing the vocalizations of a song, and then the stage girls are lip syncing, or vice versa.
Right. We do a common. It's really kind of very creative how they combine, because we do sing live, but then there are times where the divas, the three girls that they call the divas in the show, kind of like our angels or our higher consciousness, they take on the song and they sing, and we lip sync to them, almost as if they were a soundtrack or the radio.
And unlike the Broadway production, which is a huge $1 million event, this is a very intimate, small theater here in Chicago, which feels very appropriate, ironically, for Priscilla, who originally was supposed to take place in a small venue like this.
Broadway has millions and millions of dollars, and they have the ability to bring in sets and costumes and extravaganza. We have a lot of that, but they smashed a Broadway show into a small space. And that was a challenge. But you're right in the fact that a lot of the scenes take place in a small bar or a bus. So it does lend itself to a more intimate experience. And what I was saying earlier is that Bernadette was really a heart and had a lot of heart in the movie. Not as much when they started doing the musical. She was very often a comic relief, which kind of disappointing me, because it's sort of that Milton Berle, A Man in a Dress kind of thing. I didn't know that when I started doing the show. I saw just the circus. I saw the usual clips that they show on the internet with all the big dance numbers and the flash. And I thought this would be fun. And then as I got into the show, I realized that there was a lot of heart, and there was a lot of really poignant moments in the show that when I found them on the internet, you have to dig a little deeper for those sections. It was kind of played very lightly and as a joke, even the love scene with Bernadette and Bob, and even the violent scene where she kicks the guy's ass for trying to, rape Adam. There was a scene where she actually just kind of kicked him lightly and then flipped her hair and said, "There, now you're fucked." And I was like, after decades of homophobia and decades of abuse and marginalized in our community, for a person of her age, it didn't seem appropriate to me at all. So my take on the character, I think, is informed by my experiences as a trans person, and even as growing up in the gay community and all the experiences I've had, it's definitely informed a different way of viewing the character and the material.
For a lot of trans people, like the character Bernadette, and maybe for you too, the gender nonconforming theater or drag or performing in a nightclub mm-hmm. is their first foray into embracing and coming out as trans. Can you talk about the parallels between Bernadette's character and your own life?
Yeah, you know, we mentioned Alex early. She pointed out to me many years ago. She says, "You're an enigma." I says, "What do you mean?" She says, "No one that I know of," she said, "has ever been a successful performer without going through the drag lip sync route." You know, because she started at the Baton and other clubs in Chicago, but then she, you know, started acting and using her real voice. And she says, "You're the only person I know that has never done that." And there is a community in the pageant and the lip sync world and the drag world that I realized many years later that I had kind of missed out on that community. And
because you never performed at like Miss Continental.
No. I've just never.
Have you ever lip sync a song ever until now?
And I did once when I did Tony and Tony's Wedding, uh-huh. not Tony and Tina's Wedding, Tony mm-hmm. and Tony. Monica Merrill sang "I'm Every Woman," and I did backups with another girl. So I did one backup lip sync number before then.
But I remember very clearly that Honey West sings live. She's a real talent, not like you loser lip-syncing queens.
Oh, I've heard that a lot. And you know what? Lip-syncing is not easy. It's a special talent and skill, and I have great respect for it. It's not something that I mastered, but it, you know, when you can really, when you see, and you'll notice when you see mm-hmm. lip-sync artists, you can tell the difference when you see somebody that you really engage with and someone that you can see that's, you know, performing the song, but really doesn't reach you.
Well, so in order to prepare to lip sync in Priscilla, did you basically sort of go back to that 10-year-old standing in front of mommy's mirror with a hairbrush?
A little bit. Yeah, for sure. Absolutely. You know, the rehearsal process was fast and furious. We didn't really have a lot of time to delve into that. So we just did it. And ironically, there's a number in the show, I Will Survive, where Bernadette is very, very determined to explain to young Adam the art of lip sync. Getting every nuance just so. And it's ironic for people that know me that know that that's not my history. And I do a couple of times during the shows, I've heard a few chuckles because, you know, that like, that's kind of ironic.
Honey's lip syncing.
Yeah, Honey's lip syncing. Look at that.
Well, and for Chicagoans who have been part of the entertainment scene, the gay bars and theater here in Chicago, you know, you're certainly such a figurehead and such a part of our history here. That it's really a treat to sort of see you pay tribute to your own experience in this musical. And so if you're in town, definitely check it out. Mark, you liked it a lot.
I absolutely loved it. What I loved about it, too, is like, you know, I enjoyed the movie. I saw it like, you know, I don't know how many times I rented it after it came out.
Sure.
And then I saw the Broadway play when it came through town. And seeing you guys do it, what was really great about it is a small theater, 88 seats, and you guys are right there. So it's, you know, you're seeing people, the actual expression on people's faces, you're seeing it happen, and it's just fun to see it. You feel as though you're involved in it.
And like the original Priscilla, Queen of the Desert, it is a bare bones production, and you guys make the most out of, you know, and David Zack, the director, in the past, people would be like, "David, why can't we have a spotlight here?" You know? It's like, because we can afford it.
Yeah.
And, you know, this is like community theater. David Zack was one of those people who would bring in national names to Chicago mm-hmm. back when nobody did that. The bars didn't do it. And he was a pioneer of doing a lot of LGBT theater.
Sure.
And at the same time, there was very little money for that. So I remember that lamentation of people sort of wishing that there were better production values.
Right.
And now in 2017, where we're sort of like in a, like, here we're taping this podcast, you know, and look at this. This, I mean, this gorgeous lighting that we have for you.
I love it.
I mean, this is like, you know, rival, and this is in our home. This is part of the reason we have technology and everything's so sophisticated and slick. And so having this sort of intimate, grassroots, barebone, you know, theater production that David Zach is still doing all these years later is a real treat. It's a real part, a living part of history. And I encourage, if you're in town, to definitely come check it out.
Yeah.
Now, let's talk about Vampire Lesbians of Sodom.
Okay.
So you co-starred with Transparent's Alexandra Billings. Mm-hmm. Tell us about that production. Tell the show, because a lot of people... Jesse wants your attention here. Yes. But
this is Charles Bush's,
Charles Bush's
big piece of work, right?
You and Alexandra Billings play two undead lesbians who are bloodthirsty and hungry, have a rivalry for each other.
Sure, yeah. Well, it takes place in different decades. It starts off in Sodom, mm-hmm. and then it moves to the 20s. And in our production, everything, the set went black and white. Our faces, we had a makeup change to black and white. So it looked like you're watching a black and white movie.
Oh, wow.
And then the third segment was, in our production, was 70s in Vegas. So then we did another makeup change. And Charles Bush is actually coming to town to the Pride Arts Center this weekend.
He's such a character.
He is. Mm. He is, yeah.
He's kind of like morphed into those old Broadway legends that he likes to portray. You know what I'm saying? Like, I'm sure he didn't start out that way. But we were like in the backseat of a bus in the Austin International Drag Festival.
And Fausto, Fausto was giving him business advice.
Well, because Charles turns to me and he's like, I'm not sure if I should get onto this YouTube thing. So, I mean, putting my stuff out there, are they going to pay me? I mean, should I sell T-shirts? What kind of, because a lot of drag queens, they travel with so much merchandise. They're bringing bottle openers and dildo. One drag queen here in town just launched a dildo line today. Mm-hmm.
Lucy Stool. Butt plugs and cock rings.
And so, and so it's interesting, like, for someone like Charles Bush to be sort of, like, contemplating this, this change that we... I mean, there's definitely been a change in the culture.
Sure,
how drag queens, how gender nonconforming people, how LGBT artists have been embraced. And as a consequence, all of us who are still around, we're sort of like the Vampire Lesbians of Sodom, traveling through time and sort of like trying to make sense of the changing world around us.
Yeah.
And for you, what has been the biggest change you've observed in the way people think about gender nonconforming performers, drag queens, trans entertainers?
Well, when Alex first moved to California... She would tell me about the auditions that she would go on where somebody would write a character that is a trans character, but they wanted her to act like a drag queen. So there would be the snapping girl, that kind of stuff. And she's like, I'm a transgender woman, and that's not what I do. They're like, oh, no, but can you just do it? And very often, trans roles were being written by straight men or gay men who really didn't understand the sensibilities of being trans. Now that's changed. It is changing. It's still, whereas before they wanted a drag queen or a man in a dress, a comic relief or sometimes even a visual gag, they now really are writing transgender roles
about as human beings and as caricatures.
As sure. As
but, people. Right now you're painted for the gods.
I am. And this is, not my normal. I happen to live with a designer. Yeah. A gay designer who Derek Taylor from Taylor and Company. He lives for this. He lives through this. But we're doing a promotion tonight at Sidetrack. It's musical Mondays at Sidetrack, if you know that, they live. It's the sacred hollow grounds for musical theater. So we're gonna have fun tonight.
Priscilla carries a lot of iconic songs. Hold on, before I ask this question about the music, trans, not trans? You're saying trans as a singular or plural? Is that am I not getting that word?
I see it as the same thing.
Really? Okay. Yeah, it's the first time I've heard that. So it's kind of interesting
Trans woman. I guess it is trans. Maybe not. I don't know who I am.
Trans-Vietnamese restaurant is down the street. Yeah.
But Alexandra Billings said that the character that she portrays in Transparent is inspired and influenced a lot by you.
She did tell me that once, you know, the one of the first scenes that Davina is with Mara in her kitchen, she gives her her first hormone. And that happened to me with Alex.
She gave
me my first hormone pill many years ago, yeah.
What was that experience? Because for a lot of trans women, their first hormone pill is more meaningful than they realize once they actually start.
It's really, you know, there's a whole process.
Yeah.
To be a trans, you have to go through another adolescence. And that means everything, the awkward, the gawky, the sometimes the acne, the weight gain, the everything, your body changing, everything is, it's a horrible thing to go through at any age, but I went through it in my 40s for the second time. And, you know, one of the first steps, you know, I divide it between acknowledging that I was trans. Then there was an accepting of the idea, and then there was an embracing, and then there was more of a resolve where I feel I'm at now. You know, I acknowledged it when I took the first hormone. That was when I finally said, oh, yeah. And then when things started to develop, my body started to change, then there was more of an accepting of this is the new normal. Mm-hmm. You know, you dress different, you act different. And then the really embracing of it was when I got more used to it and really more comfortable with my skin. And the resolve is, oh, okay, I'm here. Mm-hmm. This is, you know, I never tried to fool anybody or to, you know, I accept the fact that I'm a trans woman.
Mm-hmm.
You know, some girls, I guess, would try to forget their past, and they do. And in a way, they, you know, they'll destroy pictures of their youth and growing up and their families and friends. And
Alexandra Billings made it into a documentary.
She made it into a documentary. You know, for me, yeah. I feel that's healthier. If I was younger and 18 and or 16 and transitioned and before a lot of more male attributes became more prominent, maybe it would be easier to not have to deal with the stigma of being different. But for me, it was always kind of like, well, if I erase all those years of my life, I'm erasing part of me and I'm erasing friends and family. And to me, that didn't seem right or comfortable. But, you know, it's a personal decision.
And here you are now starring in Priscilla. A lot of the music in the movie doesn't necessarily make it into the show.
Yeah.
One of my favorite songs is Charlene's I've Never Been to Me.
Yeah.
A very popular song for a while for drag queens lip sync too.
And the ABBA songs aren't in there either.
No, ABBA probably because of Mamma Mia didn't lend their music to the musical. So, and if you watch the progression of even Priscilla the musical, each time they license the show, sometimes the music changes. So we don't, as a theater company, we don't have the option of choosing what music we use. It comes licensed, and that's
what, as a package.
Mm-hmm, absolutely. And it will change from time to time.
Well, lucky for us, in the title of the show, we can call it Go Honey West, inspired by the song Go West by the Village People.
Yeah.
What are some of the, I mean, because these songs are so much part of our consciousness and our dreams and our identity, and it really more than any other musical, like Priscilla, Queen of the Desert, really showcases a lot of these old school gay anthems, which Mark and I were talking about actually weren't old school gay anthems to begin with. They were actually started out as cover songs, and then later on were interpreted by somebody else.
We've got a whole show coming up with those, too.
But what is it? Cyndi Lauper's Girls Just Want to Have Fun.
Oh, don't give it away.
Well, I don't want to give all away, but
okay.
Cyndi Lauper's Girls Just Want to Have Fun originally started out as a kind of a misogynistic song, like dismissing women, saying those girls, all they want to have is fun. Yeah. And then Cyndi Lauper sort of reclaimed it in the late 80s, I believe.
Right? Early 80s.
And then when they Priscilla, Queen of the Desert came out, it was such a hit. Steven Spielberg had to get into it. Do you remember like people wanting? And so they had girls just want to have fun repurposed for that movie, right? Yeah. Meaning drag queens. And do you remember like the buzz when Tu Wong Fu was being filmed and everybody had to send in an audition tape for it? Do you still have that tape?
No, I didn't. Well, you know, I got to work with Cyndi Lauper on the Oprah show for 2 days on the, it was Oprah's season premiere for that particular season. And they had Tu Wong Fu on. And Cyndi had repurposed the song a little bit with that reggae beat. Hey now, hey now. What? And she had all the girls in the back. So we got to be a part of that, which was exciting. You know, the music in the film, Priscilla, was a compliment to the story. Mm. In the musical, they used musical pieces to further the story. So they take existing music and, you know, where it's girls just want to have fun. All the songs sometimes are telling a story. So even in MacArthur's Park, there's that middle section. There will be another song for me, for I will sing, which I didn't even remember. But it's part of our show. And it's and they use it as a love song for Bernadette and Bob. It's interesting how they took existing things, the story, the plot, and existing music, and kind of collated them together to tell the story and it's kind of odd, but it's kind of cool how they did it.
There was a movie in the late 80s with a guy who plays Obi-Wan Kenobi.
How did he get in this conversation?
Ewan McGregor or
the Ewan McGregor movie that was a musical.
The Velvet Goldmine?
No, that wasn't Velvet Goldmine. It was the other musical he was in. That is
Moulin Rouge.
Yeah. And that was another that did kind of a similar thing where they took existing music and told different stories throughout it, which is kind of genius. Mm-hmm.
It's a lot of fun. And it's also the way that a lot of nightclub entertainers used to present music back in the day, especially cabaret artists like you. Mm-hmm. You used to, it was not just you out there like a jukebox singing songs. You sort of contextualized them.
Absolutely.
And you wove them into a narrative, much like the Diva Diaries or even A Taste of Honey.
Yeah. And even a really good lip sync artist, you know, Chili Pepper used to do this at the Baton, where she would say, you know, be performing a song, lip syncing a song, and tell three or four different stories to three or four different audience members or groups of tables, you know, whether, you know, somebody was talking and she would refer to that, you know, let's give them something to talk about. And then she would go on and tell different stories, which so personalized an absolute stagnant song that's already been done. That is, that's part of the art, I think, and the skill of lip sync to tell your own story through somebody else's song. And it's fascinating to see it done really well.
It's heartbreaking that one of the biggest stages for cabaret, certainly one of my favorite venues, was Gentry on State Street and on Halsted Street, is no longer there.
Yeah. I remember, well, originally it was on Rush Street. There were three total.
There were three of them, right? Mm-hmm. And then there was like, it had two levels.
Sure.
Mm-hmm. And the floor had strippers inside of it. And upstairs was I think the one on State Street was the one that had two levels. And Eartha Kitt came and did a show.
That was State Street. Yeah. And that's did when...
Were you there in the room when that happened?
Yeah.
I was there too.
I was part of the benefit. Well, it was a cast of Cinderella when she was here doing Cinderella. And it was a benefit.
Broadway Cares, I think, right?
Broadway Cares. Mm-hmm. And so I got to perform with them. It was her and
Ricardo Montalban.
Deborah. I almost said it was Deborah Gibson because she was very, very adamant. Very stern at that time.
Yeah, I don't think she is anymore.
She's relaxed a little bit, but I remember because I just caught myself because she left such an impression.
She's going to call me and be like, it's Deborah, damn it.
No, she was very sweet, but that was such an impression. Mm-hmm. It made me second-guess myself.
I was such a huge Eartha Kitt fan, and she and I, before her career kind of reignited, I started writing letters to what was her daughter,
oh my God,
Kit Shapiro.
Yeah.
And I would like, you know,
my champagne wishes and cover. Yeah,
that's mm-hmm. right, my dear.
She sang that night.
She champagne did. Taste was my beer bottle. Yeah. So I was like, I had already met her and I was like, I'm going to hang out with my bestie, Eartha, you know. So I was working at the Archdiocese of Chicago down the street.
Yeah.
And that show was supposed to be at 10 o'clock at night. I got off work at 6:00. And I went down to Gentry and I was like, is this where this show's going to be? And they're like, yeah, but it's not for another 4 hours. I'm like, I don't care. I'm sitting
down. I want a seat.
And I got a table right next to Eartha.
Yeah.
It was Mark, my sister, me, and my roommate, Lucas, at the time.
I don't think Lucas came.
Lucas was there, yeah.
Okay.
It was the four of us.
All right.
And I was like, you know what? How much does a bottle of champagne cost? And we started drinking. We were lit by the time Eartha came into the room. Deborah Gibson, you guys. And my sister's like, my brother is your biggest fan, and you're not giving him the time of day. Oh.
She read Eartha Kitt.
And Eartha's like, girl, get your hands off me. I was like, please don't break the celebrity. Please.
Don't break her. Oh, my gosh.
Oh, and so, yeah, later on, we got to interview her daughter, Kit Shapiro, who said that Eartha died on Christmas Day. And she left the world much of the way she entered it, with a scream.
Oh, that's...
She was screaming. Ah! And she's like, Mom, you can die now. Ah! No. You can go, Mom. You can go now. Ah! And then she, like, it was like a...
That's horrifying.
A movie or something. Yeah, I know.
I was like, don't want to know that. That's like,
till the last moment of her life. That's,
but you know, if that's one of those, you know, if that's the way you're going to check out, you just do it with dramatic flair.
Yeah, I guess.
Don't go quietly into the night. Isn't that what they say?
They say
rage against the dying of the light.
We can go quietly into the night, can we?
I think so.
No one's going to hold it against us.
No.
You know, it's like as we mature in life, you know, sometimes it's like, and as an entertainer, we sort of want to relax a little bit and stop and smell the roses.
Yeah.
And that's, you know.
I got to see her live at that. Town Square when I was working in Provincetown. Yeah. And this was maybe, I don't know, 5-10 years ago, and still had the slit in her skirt up to her hip and still saucy and sassy, and she was still fantastic, you know.
And you, like me, you do a flawless Eartha Kitt impersonation.
My champagne wishes and caviar dreams, yeah.
You really got that.
I
mean, Honey West's voice and Eartha Kitt's voice are just a little bit different. You know, if you want to
I'm actually a terrible mimic.
You do a pretty good job.
I know I can do a little bit of that. Mm. Just a little bit of that.
Maybe. I remember you and Alexandra Billings having this whole thing where you're like spouting celebrities at each other and trying to imitate them. And that was one of the most entertaining
things.
Usually
that was me telling her, you know, to the Bankhead. Katharine Hepburn, and she would do it. She's like a trained cat. She was fantastic.
I wanna know the dirt, because there's a lot of rumors, a lot of conversation about Oprah's friendship with Chili Pepper.
Rumors? I don't think there's any rumors. I think it's pretty much out there.
What is that friendship like? Because for people who don't know what Chili Pepper is, she's this wild, wild entertainer, trans woman, and she's like spitting, you know, cuss words like, bitch, you listen to me, whore, I got something to tell you, you know. And Oprah, it just seemed like such an unlikely friendship there.
You know, early in my understanding, if I remember correctly, early in Oprah's career in Chicago, she had met Chili at a party or had her on, I forget what the story is, but they kind of became friends. And before Oprah was as popular as she became, you know, Chili knew a lot of people in town, I think introduced her to some people. And so they did become friends. And
Chili will not let you forget it.
Well, Chili is Chili, you know. We went on a vacation to see Miss Florida. Yeah. And I remember, because Chili doesn't fly or drive a car, but she will drive with somebody. So I flew down to Florida and drove back in a van.
With her.
Road trip with Chili Pepper. And I remember her, we were, you know, because you get into kind of a drive coma and we're just coming through Georgia somewhere. And she remembers everything. She says, Mary, around that corner, there's going to be a sign that says tomatoes. And sure enough, there was a sign hanging that said Ados. But there had been a tomato. And there's a, around that corner, there's going to be the biggest tree you ever saw in your life. And there it was. So we're driving. Oh, I'm driving. And all of a sudden, we're listening to Oldie Station. She says, Mary, she says, turn up the radio. I feel like I'm in Good Voice. And then proceeded to perform number after number for the next half hour, 45 minutes until she got tired. And then we had a sandwich.
But, so it was actually a really fun, pleasurable road trip.
You know, Chili will tell you, she says, Mary, I'm the star of my own cartoon.
She
and
is.
She gets it. She gets who she is. She's... She loves entertaining, and she is almost always on. And then there are all those times, if you get to know her, where she is, you know, just Chili. And mm-hmm. I like those times a lot.
I could see the three, you and Alexandra and Chili, doing sort of a Witches of Eastwick production.
That would be fantastic. I would love that.
Let's talk about your pioneering plays about AIDS. What is it? The Wizard of AIDS and the Clean Cut Kid, that was the first musical to address the AIDS epidemic.
Well, Dirty Dreams of a Clean Cut Kid was the first show I did in Chicago. And Henry Mack wrote a series of poetry mm-hmm. and journaled different segments of his experiences. He was from San Francisco, of people in his community and his experiences going through that time period. And Paul Katz, I think he was in New York at the time, wrote music to some of these vignettes or scenes. And what happened with that combination was Dirty Dreams of a Clean Cut Kid. And it was, how did I begin becoming the man I've been? No violation or made me dream I'd live the life I did. No, the ultimate determination was of dirty dreams of a clean-cut kid. That was how the show opened.
Okay.
It was, it started in San Francisco with a group of friends that had a shared experience. When they brought it to Chicago, Dan Stetzel rearranged the music and turned it into a really... a popular show here. It was the same time Party was in town with David Dillon's show. But it resonated with people, and we ran for a long time. Mm. And I was a boy at the time, so I was one of the four of the guys. But it was an incredible show. I just found out that Dan Freddy, one of the other actors, may have a tape of it somewhere. So I'm going to try to get a hold of that.
Ooh. Well, it's certainly like theater and performance was such a important part of fighting the discrimination that people experienced through the AIDS crisis.
Yeah. One of the songs was Waiting for the Lab Report. And Does It Matter? Waiting. Yeah. There were dark points and one of the, you know, we just talked about Go mm-hmm. Peace in the Night. There was a song like that. There was, it was a lot of really, personal experiences that he had written.
The Wizard of AIDS.
Wizard of AIDS was not my show, but I got to do that. It was HealthWorks. Gosh, you're pulling up that's like 20, 30 years ago.
That's what we do here.
Yeah.
This is your life. Oh, wow. I need a little research.
HealthWorks, it used to be housed right on the corner of Broadway and Belmont. HealthWorks Theater, and it was something written, I think it was actually originally commissioned, mm-hmm. and it toured high school high schools and even younger audiences. But it, you know, there was the Red Ruby Rubber Slippers, and you know, they were on the quest. It was, you know, I played Glinda, and Alex played the Wicked Witch, and it was the
typecast again.
it was just the
and it
story.
Was Dorothy traveling on the Yellow Brick Road, or
of HIV
trying to get back to like.
Well, yeah, there was the Wicked Witch of shared needles, mm-hmm. and you know, and then she Dorothy had a little bag that had red ruby slippers, and those red ruby rubber slippers. And it was all themed around education and information.
Was it any good?
It was very good. I mean, it ran
for a long time.
A long time, and it would keep coming back in Chicago. And
do you think it could play well today, or is it something that's like from another era?
I think it would play because it was genuinely funny and it was well written and it had a lot of comic moments. And anybody who is a fan of The Wizard of Oz, and most people really are, would enjoy it.
I'm realizing that there were a lot of musicals made to deal with the AIDS crisis. The first movie musical was Patient Zero. You remember that one?
Yeah.
And I guess it seemed like at the time, like a really important thing to do, because you don't have like Diabetes, the musical.
No.
But or other types of, it's the way that the AIDS affected us made us have to have the need to create art about it.
Yeah. I mean, art is the way people deal with a lot of things. I mean, no, there wasn't a musical about diabetes, but there have been many movies about cancer. I mean, what was the Shirley MacLaine Terms of Endearment?
Yeah.
I mean, there have been lots of things that explore those issues, and that helps people go through those types of things. You know, speaking of which,
yeah,
the arts funding.
What arts funding?
With Trump?
Is
in jeopardy. You know,
destined to be cut. And shows like yours and shows like Priscilla and shows and people who talk about it, like me, activists, we're going to become much more important in these years to come. And
I always thought of myself as important, so.
Like, don't tell Foster's ego.
No, really, you are, because
thank you.
You have a forum. Out of your own house, you have a form that there are no limitations, I assume. You can say anything you want to say. You can do
just
anything.
Just don't piss off the non-existing advertisers.
Okay.
But I think the thing about social media and the internet is, in one sense, it is, we got to be really careful because it was a big factor in why we got Trump in the first place. Lots of misinformation, but new media, I think, isolates us. It's really easy to work and collaborate with the people you already know and to even steal from people that in other cities. And, you know, and so it's really important to reach out to people in your community that you don't normally interact with and to innovate new ideas, because it's so easy to be derivative.
Yeah.
You know, I think I think a whole emergence is going to happen
right now, because there was the gay community and the trans community and the African American community and the Jewish community and the women and the elder. There's so many minorities or marginalized people. And thank you to the far right. Thank you to the alt right for really pushing us so far into the corner that we're starting to pull together, because together, we're not a minority. Together, all of these communities can change all of this, because only 27% of the voting population in this country voted for Donald Trump. About that amount, probably a little more, voted for Hillary. But 30%,
I think it was 3 million more people voted for Hillary.
3 million more, Hillary, but 30% of the eligible voting population of this country didn't vote at all. So 27%, if we pull all of our communities who have been fighting their own battles separately together, we are the majority, and we can make effective change. Because I forget who just posted this on the internet. I saw it. I'd love to give them credit for it. But they said, we just hired a new temp. The president and all of the government positions are positions that we're the boss of. They're temporary employees. And so whatever happens in this next year, if he gets impeached, or 4 years or 8 years, I can't imagine we're going to let this happen for 8 years. But we can rise, and we can make a difference if we bond together. And that's, I think, already happening. By the Women's March, 250,000 people alone in Chicago. But
Madonna and Cher are now friends again.
Right. And
that's a huge thing.
You know, when you saw even different cities in our country, but then you saw globally countries or cities around the globe, you know, that's pretty powerful. When has that happened? You know, we protested in my era, the Vietnam War, you know, in the 60s. But this is something I haven't seen in my lifetime. I've never seen this type of uprising.
It's unprecedented.
Mm-hmm. It is.
Like
it
Donald is. Trump soon to be.
Yeah.
it's. I think, I'm not sure who's told me to this. It's like a lot of this is temporary.
Yeah. It absolutely is temporary. And, you know, people who have been around for decades. Hello.
And survivor.
We know that we've been through this. We've been through where, you know, I discovered about 47 years ago that I was less than, that my life and what I thought and felt and who I was not as important or not as valid as everybody else. I lived with that my whole life, and we had just started making great progress. And you know what? We will again. We will again. I see it as an, you know, our community has a lot of addictions and self-hate and guilt and stigmas attached to who we are. If someone is addicted to a drug or alcohol, usually they have to hit a rock bottom. They have to bottom out. They have to really scrape the gravel before things get better. And I think that's where our country is. I think we've hit some rock bottoms where they're willing to take us back to the 1950s where no one had rights, or if you're not exactly who that 27% of the population want you to be, then you don't count. Well, I think we've gone too far. That genie is out of the bottle. We lost track of it, and we let them take the reins. But
well, we do need to, we do need to step up, and we need to get out the vote, and we do need to change those swing states, and we need to figure out what are we going to do. Is it, do you stop gerrymandering? Do you get rid of the Electoral College? Yeah. It's just, you know, we're allowing these people to control us that, and really they don't have the right to control us.
But you know what? We gave them that right. And all of those things you mentioned have to change. But the trick is that 30% that stayed home and said, oh, I don't really care about politics, or I don't want to vote for a lesser of two evils, or I don't understand it, or it my vote doesn't count. 30%, a third, basically, of our country didn't care. So maybe some of the policies will affect them, and maybe they'll say, oh, this really does count, and I count, and we as a country count, and I think it'll be different.
Or we can all start learning to speak Russian. Mm-hmm.
Listen, you know what? If this experience, this last 18 months and this last week, if this hasn't changed some people's mind, if what he's going to do and what he has already touted he's going to do and what he's already started doing, if that doesn't change people's mind, if that doesn't ignite a fire under them, then you know what? As a country, we're not going to change. It's not going to get better. I can't imagine that. I can't imagine that.
One good news. Thank you for taking us to church, Honeywell.
But together, we'll make our plans.
one good news is Betsy DeVos ain't going to make it, honey.
She's not going to make it?
No. They're like, you're too crazy even for us.
Oh, she's not going to be our Secretary of Education?
She's not going to be our next
Secretary. Is she dropping out or something?
They're just not going to confirm her.
Yeah. Well, after she made tweets or posts on the Facebook that people corrected with a red pen, it's misspelling inauguration, I think.
She meant to say historic, and so she wrote historical, or whoever was the person, so she changed that. But the rest of the thing was wrong, too, because it's the inauguration and swearing-in ceremony. It's for him. It's like, it's not. It's just the inauguration. You don't need the other part. It's all redundant.
Yeah.
Pride Film and Plays, production of the Tony Award-winning musical Priscilla, Queen of the Desert, is currently happening here in Chicago.
It is.
It runs till February 12th. So do not wait.
Go and see it, folks.
Go see it. Honey West, a legend, an entertainer, and a sweet, sweet gal.
Oh, thank you.
And earning your name, Honey West. No relationship to the 1965 TV show on ABC.
No. No, friends of mine started calling me Honey West when I first, a friend put me in face at, as a in 1987 as a New Year's Eve party thing. And I thought, okay, this will be fun. Well,
it was a stage name that was given to you.
Well, that I called myself Renee. Okay. I never saw myself as a drag queen. Mm-hmm. I just saw myself as this person. I didn't know what I was thinking, but my friend Russell Wright and Thomas Garnica started calling me Honey West. And I'm like, that's a strange name. Mm-hmm. I didn't care for it, but it stuck. So then I started calling myself Honey West. I started performing at the Gentry's. I started doing benefits for the community. And someone came up to me one day at Gentry. It was Gentry and Halstead. A couple years after I'd been performing, he says, I remember Honey West. I'm like, you saw me perform before? They're like, no, the TV show. I'm like, what TV show? And so,
Aaron Spelling. Honey West. Yeah. Please,
there's a murder mystery.
Mm. Well, she was the first female blonde detective, woman detective, who carried around an ocelot named Bruce. And it was a series of books. There were 11 books that sold like 11 million copies. And there was a huge fan club. And the TV show with starring Anne Francis lasted...
One season?
It was like
30 episodes.
A year and a half or 30. I don't know. It was 1965 or 67. And so I investigated. That was defunct. And I investigated the name because I thought at the time I was looking into making a CD of music. And so I looked into the copyright. It was available. So I copyright or trademarked the name so I wouldn't have any problems later on. Well, years later, I get a call from Gloria Fickling, who... Her and her husband, H.G. Fickling, wrote the books. And they said, you have the trademark to our name. And I'm like, it was dropped. And this was, I'd had it almost 7 years at that point. And it was a lapse on their, you know, on their side. And so I had just done it to protect myself, just so if I became popular, no one could say you can't perform anymore. So just recently, it's been 11 years or so, just recently they had contacted me and I gave permission to coexist with the trademark so that they could own what they created and I could own what I created. So we both have access or own the trademark.
Mm-hmm. Well, I hope if they do another television or film production, they'll give you a cameo at least.
Well, you know what? There
with a good dressing room.
Because it's a good story. I mean, it's who doesn't want a hot blonde chick with an ocelot?
Right. You know? Well, no, they've been very sweet. And Gloria was very sweet to me. And I didn't, you know, I never wanted to cause any problem for them. I just didn't want problems for myself. So, there is a movie in the works. Years ago, Reese Witherspoon and her husband, was it Platt at the time? P-L-A-T. They had commissioned one of the books the right to make a movie, Honey West. But I think there still is a movie in the works, and it would be great to have a little cameo. Yeah. Who knows?
Throw the gal a bone.
Throw a gal a bone. Yeah. That's right.
I am available for hire. Honey, what's your website or social media presence that people can contact you?
You know what? I have a YouTube channel called Honey West Chicago. It's a lot of Alex and I performing, just videos of the old cabaret act. And then Facebook, Honey West on Facebook.
Honey West, thank you so much for taking the time to talk to
us
today. It's a real pleasure.
It was great.
Thank you for being a friend.
Is that a Golden Girl reference? I'm a Golden Girl almost. Yeah.
We're all going to go to Miami and start.
Estelle Getty was only 50 when she started that role.
Yeah.
She was the youngest one. She was the youngest one, and she was the first to go.
Yeah, that's what I tell you. Be careful what you wish for. No. Hey, guys, Feast of Fun is made possible because of financial support of fantastic people like you. We can't do the show without you participating. Join our Facebook group. Honey West is part of it.
I am.
She interacts with it. You want to interact with us?
Listen, I still think about the most recent picture I saw there. It's just...
Which one was that?
With the sweet potato.
Oh.
That thick, veiny sweet potato.
Yeah.
I just couldn't
stop looking at it. Not just because I'm like a perv and it's like, you know, just... But,
it got
but,
you cock hungry.
But it was just such an odd... crazy potato.
It was a hot potato.
Well, because it had these sweet potatoes, very sweet.
Mm-hmm. It looks like a dick.
Looked like a nice, thick, big, veiny dick.
Well, I'm glad you said that. I get, but it was so realistic looking for in a potato. It was just I couldn't stop looking at it because it was just bizarre.
Some potatoes you eat and others you admire.
I wonder what it would taste like.
Guys, you can access 12 years of amazing podcasts at feastoffun.com/plus. Consider becoming a premium subscriber and help support your favorite podcast that you love.
And don't forget to visit our store at feastoffun.com/store and get yourself a t-shirt.
And today's episode is simulcast onto YouTube. Thanks to people who made that possible. YouTube.com/feastoffun, where you can see Honey West in all her glory. Painted to filth.
For filth. Support them. Now more than ever, we need shows like this. Anyone out there speaking our truth, we need them. Will you come back?
I can't believe that it's been so long.
I will. I will. Absolutely. Yeah. I love talking to you.
We love you so much. Yeah.
Thanks for having me.
Bye, everybody.
Bye.
Bye.